recognizing that no statement can undo the damage that was done, what it can do is help reaffirm the principles that should guide our future.
President Obama signs the U.S. onto the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, the 16th of December. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Anchorage's Kinnick Arm Bridge moves a step closer.
Having that record of decision means that the project is now near shovel ready, and what puts us in a much more competitive position.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Begin your UAF fisheries degree at any major University of Alaska campus and finish in Fairbanks or Juneau. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
President Obama pledged to keep listening to and advocating for Alaska Natives and Native Americans today at his second Tribal Nations Summit. The Interior Department in Washington hosted hundreds of leaders from the country's federally recognized tribes, including those from Alaska, who filled the front rows of the auditorium. Representatives from Alaska Native corporations were also in attendance. President Obama's biggest announcement was that the U.S. will sign on to the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, something Alaska Native leaders said was a top priority.
Recognizing that no statement can undo the damage that was done, what it can do is help reaffirm the principles that should guide our future. It's only by heeding the lessons of our history that we can move forward. And as you know, in April, we announced that we were reviewing our position on the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. And today I can announce that the United States is lending its support to this declaration.
The U.S. was one of only a handful of nations who refused to sign the declaration back in 2007. It protects the rights of Native people worldwide and affirms their rights to traditions and culture. The Bush administration complained that it might conflict with the relationship between the United States government and tribes, but President Obama said it was time to sign on.
The aspirations it affirms, including the respect for the institutions and rich cultures of Native peoples, are one we must always seek to fulfill.
Obama said what matters more than words are actions to match those words, and that, he said, is what today's conference was about. He touched on highlights of the past year, passage of the Indian Health Care Improvement Act, which is part of the larger health care overhaul still under fire from Republicans. He talked about signing the Tribal Law and Order Act this summer and the recent settlement of the Cobell case, a long-running battle over government mismanagement of billions of dollars in royalties for Indian trustees. President Obama says he hopes to change the level of faith tribes have with the federal government.
The truth is, for a long time, Native Americans were implicitly told that they had a choice to make. By virtue of the long-standing failure to tackle wrenching problems in Indian country, it seemed as though you had to either abandon your heritage or accept a lesser lot in life. But there was no way to be a successful part of America and a proud Native American. But we know this is a false choice. To accept it is to believe that we can't and won't do better. And I don't accept that. I know there's not a single person in this room who accepts that either.
After President Obama spoke, tribal leaders met in breakout sessions with cabinet secretaries and other administration officials. Issues ranged from subsistence rights to justice to health issues and how the federal government can support tribes better in disputes with states. Justice Department Assistant Attorney General Ignacia Moreno said she heard from Alaskans that their issues are unique and may deserve individual attention.
A summit on Alaska Native issues. There was a thinking that there's something that needs to be addressed in a separate context and that maybe having just a summit on that would be helpful.
Interior Secretary Ken Salazar closed out the day by promising that the White House is listening.
I think we have shown that we have turned the page and we are doing a lot and have accomplished a lot, but also recognize the reality we have a lot more to do. you don't undo 400 years of history, frankly, in 18, 19 months. But under this president's commitment and his leadership and his direction to his cabinet, we are well on our way.
As APRN's Libby Casey reports from Washington, many Alaskans came away with hope, but also a desire to see more accomplished.
President Obama met privately with a dozen tribal leaders representing all regions of the country on Wednesday. The Alaskan there was Edward Thomas, president of the Tlingit Haida Central Council. But the meeting was cut short to just 20 minutes due to the president's packed schedule. And half the group, including Thomas, didn't get to deliver their brief addresses to Obama.
I wanted to share with him the very important information about the high cost of energy and the high cost of living in rural Alaska, and the isolation causing problems and people having adequate medical care. You know, you can go on and on about the conditions of our people in rural Alaska, and we want to make sure that there are not deep budget cuts and hopefully even some modest increases.
Thomas said the dozen Native leaders did tell the president that he needs to make sure the budget makers think about the federal government's trust responsibility with tribes before they cut costs and not skimp on Indian country.
So you have to have good budgets from the president or from the departments and not just wait for Congress to always beef them up as they have been doing historically. We got to have a better relationship on the administrative side, otherwise all your funding becomes at risk when it gets to Congress.
Thomas has met with five other presidents over the decades, and even though he was disappointed he didn't have more of a dialogue with Obama, he believes the commander-in-chief has a firm grasp on what needs to be done and is making headway. Hearing a commitment that the U.S. will sign on to the U.N. Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples was a highlight for many of the leaders, including Lee Wallace, tribal president of the Organized Village of Saxman.
With that lack of the previous one signing on, what it gives us is another format, a world format for different issues that were not being addressed with the United States government. And so it's just another playing field to be working with.
Julie Roberts Hyslop, chairwoman for the Native Village of Tanana, says President Obama is delivering a mix of action and attitude, the likes of which she hasn't seen before.
He is giving us hope. And just to see, you know, the progress he's making, and just in the 2 years that he's been there, we've seen numerous changes. Today, the biggest smile that he put on my face was endorsing the United Nations Indigenous Rights of the Native People. I think that, to me, is going to really help us move forward with saving our language, saving our way of life. And it's just so important, you know, for our young people to really take pride in who they are.
One of the younger Alaskans, 26-year-old Miranda Petruska from Nikolai's Tribal Council, says she nearly teared up repeatedly throughout the day, both from the energy and power of her fellow Alaska Natives and American Indians and from officials' reactions.
Just having them, like, acknowledge that they heard what we were saying, because I have a feeling that these are things that have been said to them forever, almost. But I'm really glad that the suicides have been brought up and that they heard us and are going to hopefully do something about it. I'm just glad that they acknowledged everything. So.
But after acknowledgement comes action. And Casanero Aceveda from the village of Cake says he brought up the topic of putting land into trust.
Because all the Indians in Alaska that are sovereign Indian tribes that not have a land base. Only the corporation, so we can get land and put it into trust, we'd have a land base and economic development.
Aceveda knows his message was received because the administration officials recited it back during the day's final wrap-up. But he and the other Alaskan leaders say they'll be listening to find out what action comes next from the president and his office. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
Yesterday, the Federal Highway Administration approved construction of the Kinnick Arm Bridge, an estimated $700 million-plus project linking Anchorage and Point McKenzie. The state agency in charge of its construction described the federal okay as an important step but hardly the final one before construction can begin. KSKA's Len Anderson reports.
Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority Board Chair Michael Foster made his agency's announcement of the federal approval at Mayor Dan Sullivan's weekly Wednesday press conference.
Today is an important day for the state. We did receive the record of decision this morning from Federal Highways on the project, and with that, we can proceed to the next step. We're anticipating a construction window in late 2012 or 2013.
The federal record of decision was a 7-year process and is an important milestone, but several more milestones remain. The most important? Funding for the 8,200-foot bridge and its needed access roads. When the Bridge and Toll Authority first proposed the project, it was to be a combination of federal and private funding with little or no state financial involvement. That has changed.
We do have a couple entities who are interested in being the private part of it. We do have discussions with the governor's office on the public side of it, and the agreements, the formal agreements, are under process, and there will be a public-private sharing of the risks and a public-private sharing of the toll revenue.
The two entities are international firms based in Australia and France. The authority's chief financial officer, Kevin Henningway, says the state's guarantee of risk coverage would help entice private involvement and an official partnership. He said another lure for private investment would be if the authority could successfully receive a $300 million federal loan on behalf of a yet undetermined private partner. The loan would make it easier for that partner to borrow bond money. Henningway said previous applications were unsuccessful.
In the past, our issue has been that we have not had a record of decision. Having that record of decision means that the project is now near shovel ready, and it puts us in a much more competitive position for the TIFIA application opportunity.
Critics of the Kinnick Arm Bridge construction argue that its very size will soak up transportation money from other needed projects, and that the authority's overtures to the state mean that could take place on both a federal and state level. They also say that the Bridge and Toll Authority's estimate of toll revenues is too high. The critics cite revised, reduced growth estimates for the Mat-Su Borough by a University of Alaska research group. Henningway noted the university findings.
We're in the process of evaluating that right now. Our traffic and revenue consultants are updating work. The results of that should be available within the next 2 to 3 months.
New population growth estimates could result in toll revenue projection changes, including the toll cost itself. The authority had put the bridge toll at $5. The record of decision includes a National Marine Fisheries Service statement that the project is not apt to impact the Cook Inlet beluga. Foster said that finding was very important to the bridge, while Henningway saw broader implications.
With that no jeopardy determination, then Federal Highways was able to issue the ROD.
I might add that no jeopardy opinion is very good news for Alaska, because it probably has bigger ramifications for what we might expect out of the beluga listing for other activities in the inlet.
The $700 million plus estimate is for a 2-lane bridge and 19 miles of access roads. It does not include an eventual link to Gamble and Ingress Streets. In Anchorage, this is Len Anderson.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Alaska groundfish harvests are up.
The picture for the next few years looks very bright.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. ACHEA, the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association, has been asked to administer the new temporary federal insurance program that allows individuals with a qualifying pre-existing condition and who have been uninsured for at least 6 months an opportunity to purchase health insurance. Capacity is limited, so contact an insurance broker or ACHEA immediately. More information at ACHIA.com. This message sponsored by ACHEA Fed.
Alaska's groundfish quotas will be increased next year. The North Pacific Fishery Management Council approved catch limits for Bering Sea and Aleutian Islands harvests at its December session in Anchorage. KSKA's Ellen Lockyer has more.
Fishing industry advocates are applauding the Council's recommendations for the 2011 Bering Sea and Aleutian Islands groundfish catch limits. The Council upped quotas for two major species, pollock and Pacific cod, increasing the total allowable catch for pollock by 54% and for Pacific cod by 35% over this year's harvest levels. Frank Kelty, president of the Marine Conservation Alliance, says the increased harvest quotas reflect not only strong growth in fish populations, but good fisheries management and the science that backs it up.
We've been told that that 2006 pollock year class was going to come in strong, and that's what we're seeing, and it's been tracked by the scientists for the last 4 years, and we're seeing the increases they projected 3-4 years ago.
MCA supports the Council's recommendations on harvest quotas for the dozen or so species that make up the federal fisheries off the coast of Alaska.
You know, the whole ecosystem in the Bering Sea is looking very good. Mackerel's up 14%, yellowfin sole 9%, and in the Gulf community, there was increases in cod and pollock in the Gulf as well. So the picture for the next few years looks very bright.
Kelty says better harvesting practices have helped fisheries as well.
They're doing a better job on bycatch issues. They're trying to do a much better job. If you look at some of the numbers on bycatch issues, they've been being reduced, and so that is a big part of what's going on.
The Council annually establishes catch limits for fish in the Bering Sea and Aleutian Islands, basing those limits on advice from scientists from a variety of sources, such as the National Marine Fisheries Service and the State Department of Fish and Game. MCA represents groundfish processors and harvesters in the Bering Sea and the Gulf of Alaska. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Beginning this Friday, Alaska State Troopers will be under new leadership. Alaska Department of Public Safety spokeswoman Megan Peters says Keith Mallard, a 14-year veteran of the Troopers, has been appointed to the top position.
Colonel Audie Holloway has decided that it is time for him to retire, so he will be stepping down this Friday on the 17th. We have Colonel Keith Mallard now. He's been promoted. Right now, they are going through this little transition period, and effective the 17th, Colonel Keith Mallard will be directing the troopers on his own.
Colonel Mallard is a graduate of the FBI National Academy and the DEA Drug Unit Commander's Academy. Prior to becoming a trooper, Mallard worked as a municipal police officer and a deputy sheriff. Peters says that in his 14 years as a state trooper, he has served the division in many different assignments.
He started his career in Fairbanks. He was a CERT member, a field training officer, and a dual-purpose canine handler. He transferred then to Antioch in 2000. He was at that post with two other troopers and responded to calls for service for 21 villages in the area. He was also the oversight trooper for the regional villages and the public safety officers, and on his personal time was even an assistant coach for Antioch High School and junior high wrestling team. In 2002, he was promoted to the rank of sergeant and then assigned to the post supervisor position in Curdwood. In addition to his duties as post supervisor, he once again served as a dual-purpose canine handler and a canine instructor.
In 2004, Mallard was promoted to lieutenant. He was appointed to be the deputy commander of the Alaska Bureau of Alcohol and Drug Enforcement in 2005. The next year, he was promoted to the rank of captain and was in charge of the Alaska Bureau of Alcohol and Drug Enforcement. Appointments of this type generally occur when the current leader retires. Mallard was promoted to rank of colonel and appointed to the position by Joe Masters, the commissioner of the Alaska Department of Public Safety. Masters was appointed as the commissioner of that department by then-Governor Palin in 2008, following the Troopergate scandal. He retained the position after Governor Parnell was reelected last month. Juneau District Attorney Doug Gardner is the new Director of Legal Services for the state legislature. He was hired Tuesday by the Legislative Council to replace Tamara Cook, who is retiring after nearly 30 years as the top legislative lawyer. The Legislative Council met in executive session in Anchorage to consider the selection. Legislative Affairs Director Pam Varney says the job is more than head of legislative legal.
The position also is the parliamentarian for the legislature and carries a drafting load and also manages the Division of Legal Services.
Varney says the job pays about $131,000 per year. Gardner is heading into his 10th year as head of the DA's office for Juneau and Sitka, where he's the top prosecutor and also manages about 10 people.
I've fought the fight for victims of domestic violence and sexual assault, and I've done that with every ounce of energy that I have. And I think that does take a lot of energy from you. And I also think it's just good for the DA's office and the district attorney position every once in a while to change over and have somebody else take their run at it.
He says one thing he's learned is how to work under pressure.
The district attorney's office in Juneau gets cases from 10 different law enforcement agencies, including the troopers, and I've been there and done that on multiple fires burning. I'd like to think that I'm pretty confident that I have a very happy staff that work in the DA's office in Sitka and Juneau, and I hope to bring some of the management experiences and some of the sort of working under pressure experiences. The integrity already is in this office that I'm going to, and I hope to maintain that and do the kind of job that certainly Ms. Cook has been doing.
Before making the transition from civil to criminal law in 2002, Gardner was a supervising attorney in the Attorney General's office, where he also worked on transportation and oil and gas issues. He says he loves the legislative process and will start his new job on January 3rd. An Anchorage judge who was voted off the bench in November will not be allowed to seek judicial office again in the state. That's the findings of the Alaska Commission on Judicial Conduct in the case of Judge Richard Postma. The commission's disciplinary hearings regarding Postma ended on Wednesday when Postma agreed that his behavior amounted to willful misconduct in office. Postma was accused of engaging in conduct that created an appearance of impropriety that did not promote public confidence in the integrity of the judiciary. Postma allegedly bullied fellow judges and court employees and sent unprofessional and offensive emails. Postma contends that he was subjected to ethnic stereotyping, discrimination, and retaliatory conduct. His lawyer, Thomas Van Flyn, says Postma decided not to defend himself against the accusations because he felt his reputation had already been damaged. The agreement requires Postma to drop state and federal discrimination lawsuits that he filed against the court system and the Alaska Judicial Council. Postma became a judge in 2007, and the problem started early last year. He was put on paid leave in April of this year.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com. Doyon Limited, based in Alaska's interior, growing across the nation. And by
Fire Island Wind, offering a renewable energy alternative to natural gas for South Central Alaska. Information at fireislandwind.com.
Alaska State Troopers have arrested a Fairbanks man who ran away from the Navy in Virginia and reinvented himself in Alaska. Trooper spokeswoman Beth Epson says troopers were alerted by federal diplomatic security service agents about U.S. Navy deserter Royce Allen Eagle's presence in Fairbanks. Epson says the 26-year-old Eagle was living under a new identity.
We went to his address, his listed address, and knocked on the door. And he answered and said, you know, I don't know what you're talking about. My name is Rick Engel. And apparently what had happened is that he deserted from the Navy, came up here, and managed to obtain a new birth certificate.
Ibsen says Eagle, who's originally from Indiana, deserted his Navy station in Newport News, Virginia in 2007 and moved to Fairbanks the following year, where he went by Rick Angle and successfully obtained several forms of identification, registered vehicles, and got a job. She says federal agents caught on when Eagle tried to get a passport with an all-zeros Social Security number. Ibsen says he's under federal investigation for several crimes and already faces charges in Alaska.
He was arrested and charged with desertion, perjury, unsworn falsification, and a false report. And those are state charges. I don't know if he's going to be charged with anything federally or if he's going to be face charges down in Lower 48.
Ibsen says it's also unknown how the Navy is handling Eagle. She says troopers deal with desertion cases fairly regularly due to the high number of service members in Alaska, but that the latest case was the first time she knows of that troopers were contacted by the U.S. State Department Diplomatic Security Service. Search and rescue crews are looking for Teller resident Kenny Lee. Teller is about 20 miles north of Nome. Alaska State Troopers were notified early this morning that Kenny Lee had left Brevik Mission on snow machine late last night and has not made it to Teller. Teller Search and Rescue Coordinator Frank Miller says crews did a thorough search of Grantley Harbor and have moved on to Dees Creek, located south of the harbor. Miller says the ice is moving in spots. On November 24th, Barbara Scholten of Teller fell through the sea ice while snow machining to Brevik Mission from Teller. Her body was recovered on November 29th. State environmental officials say an estimated 1,000 gallons of diesel fuel spilled at a utility cooperative in Unalakleet. Officials from the Unalakleet Valley Electric Co-op told the Department of Environmental Conservation that a powerhouse tank was overfilled and fuel was released into a secondary containment area covered by ice and snow. The incident occurred Sunday during fuel transfer operations. A DEC responder was scheduled to reach the community yesterday to aid in the response and to evaluate the containment area. The agency says final cleanup likely will wait until spring or summer. Unalakleet is a community of 725 people on Norton Sound, about 148 miles southeast of Nome and 395 miles northwest of Anchorage. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ellen Lockyer and Len Anderson in Anchorage, Ben Matheson in Nome, Adam Kane in Dillingham, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Rosemarie Alexander in Juneau. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by First National Bank Alaska, serving Alaskans' financial needs for nearly a century. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. The Center for Distance Education at UAF, offering online courses from any location. Information at distance.uaf.edu. And by
Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for over 50 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. Crowley.com.
It's almost time to file online for your PFD, and when you do, you can make an impact by sharing just a little with a cause you care about. Celebrate the arts, invest in education, shelter a homeless pet, lend a hand, or even make a wish come true when you pick, click, give to one of Alaska's nonprofits. Visit pickclickgive.org to decide how you will make Alaska better with a small gift from your PFD. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.